This week on Behind the Lens, cooking the grade books. The CEO of New Beginnings Schools Foundation resigns over allegations of grade inflation. We'll have the latest on this story with Marta Jusen. Also, Entergy in hot water. The utility company could be facing a fine of $2 million after a report says inadequate maintenance of the city's electrical infrastructure has impacted tens of thousands of customers. And have you ever wondered how Louisiana's public records laws work? The Lens hosted a community meeting to explain how you can use public records to hold government agencies accountable. We'll have the highlights. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
The CEO of New Beginnings Schools Foundation resigned this week. Michelle Bluen-Williams is being investigated for allegations of grade inflation at John F. Kennedy High School and falsifying public documents related to a lucrative deal with a school bus company. Marta Jusen has been reporting this story. She joins me now. Marta, when and how did these allegations first come to light?
We first learned about these allegations from a former employee, Ronell King. He was fired from the network in February. He learned about these from students in January when students found out that they weren't going to have to take remedial courses when they thought they were. Students' grades were being changed from F to D's and D to C, and Ronell found that suspicious. When he inquired further, he learned that it happened in a classroom where a teacher had resigned. And so he thought, hey, that's a pretty easy opportunity for the school to change grades if they wanted to. So he decided to look into it further.
And students who thought they were going to have to take remedial classes were the ones who actually approached an official at the school about this?
Right. So the school counselor learned about it and told Dr. King. He decided to go in and look more closely at these grades, and he saw that some grades had been manually changed and others hadn't. And that's when he thought, hey, something's not right here.
So what did Ronell King do when he got this information from the counselor?
He brought it basically immediately to the New Beginnings School Foundation and CEO Michelle Bluen-Williams. They started their own investigation, they looked into it, and when their results did not match what he thought about it, that it was suspicious, he was suspended and then later fired.
And then he reached out to you.
Correct. He came to us with a ton of evidence and wanted the public to know about this because he was worried this is going to affect students and their ability to graduate.
So what did you do with the information once he brought it to you?
We reviewed everything. He had plenty of information there showing that indeed grades had been changed. The teacher who had resigned, and she left for personal reasons, not anything related to this, had also contacted New Beginnings and said, you know, those students are supposed to get those grades. Why did you change them? So there was just kind of all this mounting evidence. And then when we went and interviewed Bluen-Williams about the allegations, she didn't really have a good explanation for why some students had different grades and other students' grades had not been changed.
So after your report came out, Bluen-Williams was placed on paid leave on April 1st. What's happened since then?
At that same board meeting, the board decided to hire an independent investigator. They hired law firm Adams and Reese to look into everything. And it has been about 5 weeks since then. There's not been a lot out of the board. Other than that, they're continuing to look into the matter. The district is also investigating. And on Tuesday, Ms. Bluen-Williams resigned.
So where does this story go from here?
We're certainly waiting for those reports back from the district and the charter network. We want to know whether or not there was any grade changes here. And it's especially important that they get these out quickly because there are students who are supposed to graduate next week. So obviously those families would like to know how this is going to potentially affect their children.
Why would somebody cook the grade books at their school? What's the potential impact of increasing grades?
Our charter schools operate in a high-stakes accountability system. And the state letter grade that the schools get every year, which includes information on grades students get in school, whether or not they're graduating on time, and things like that. That's a very important grade for these schools. And if schools are not making the cut, they're going to lose their charter contract and they're going to close.
And what about Ronell King? He was fired. What's next for him?
Well, I believe he's looking for a new job because he's probably given up hope at this point that the network would hire him back. He did at one point go and ask the board with an employment lawyer to consider hiring him back, and the board never responded in public. But what is very interesting is this week the district added an initial allegation to the things that it's investigating. They said they're now looking into alleged retaliatory acts against an employee, who we presume is Mr. King.
Retaliatory in the sense that he brought this to light and was potentially fired because of it.
Correct. In his termination letter, it said something along the lines of you couldn't provide enough evidence to support your claim that grades were being changed inappropriately.
And these kids, you know, who thought they were going to have to take remedial classes are kind of left hanging in the balance. You said that we're waiting for this investigation to wrap up so that these kids can know sort of what their future holds. What kind of deadline are they looking at?
Well, the district and the school have been pretty tight-lipped about any potential impact on kids, but certainly if these grades were not supposed to be changed, families need to know before graduation, which is coming up next week on May 17th.
Marta Jusen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Advisors for the New Orleans City Council have recommended a $2 million fine against Entergy New Orleans for inadequate maintenance of the city's electrical infrastructure, saying the company's negligence has impacted tens of thousands of customers. Michael Isaac Stein reported this story for The Lens. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Yeah, no problem.
Utility advisors for the City Council analyzed data provided by Entergy. What did they find?
So a lot of this data and analysis has come out in the past couple of years. But what was interesting about this report, it kind of brought all of that together. So, you know, I think that the central finding that really defines what this is all about is the number of outages that happen per year. So they looked at Entergy data and found that between June 1st, 2016 and May 31st, 2017, so one full year, there was 2,599 outages in New Orleans. So they also found that since 2014, the number of outages and the duration of those outages has been increasing. And to make matters worse, right about that same time, Entergy New Orleans had this kind of huge disinvestment from the distribution system. So the distribution system being the poles and the wires that you see running up and down every street. So they cut, for example, over $20 million from their capital addition fund for the distribution system. So when put together, I think that's really where this conclusion comes from, right? So at the same time that the distribution system starts failing and we start seeing an increase in these outages, it correlates exactly to when they stopped investing as heavily in it.
Mm-hmm. Investing in the maintenance of their stuff, kind of like, you know, if you had a car and you stop investing in the maintenance of your car and all of a sudden it starts breaking down constantly.
Right. And that was one of Entergy's defenses. They said, you know, we're dealing with a very old system. There's all this aging infrastructure. And, you know, the advisors kind of responded with this attitude of, well, a lot of places have aging infrastructure and it shouldn't take a council investigation for you guys to realize that and start making these investments. You know, like you were in the best position to know this was a problem. And it was your responsibility to make sure that it was at least good enough to not have over 2,000 outages in a single year.
So this report that came out this week really shows that the data seems to prove the anecdote, at least that I've seen in my social media feed, a lot of people posting, hey, my power's out, but the sun is shining, and there doesn't seem to be high winds or anything like that.
Right. And this is kind of how this whole council investigation started. You know, I talked to Andrew Tuozzolo, who's the chief of staff to Helena Moreno, and, you know, he was like, this problem was obvious from anyone who lives in this city and walks around. You know, it was no secret, but I think this data plus seeing how Entergy failed to react kind of gives the council more factual leverage to really take some punitive action now.
Along with that sort of anecdotal information, and everybody knows this happens, another reason this came to light is because people were calling their city council members, particularly Jared Brossette.
Yeah, so Jared Brossette is really has been credited with really getting the ball rolling on this. It was back in 2017. He was getting call after call from constituents saying, you know, I'm getting all these outages. I mean, something I should have mentioned before, those 2,599 outages, the majority of those were on, you know, good weather days. So nothing you can blame on rain or storm or anything like that. So he was getting a lot of complaints. And so he sent a letter to Entergy basically asking them to explain what was going on. They sent back data which gave the council kind of their first look at just how far the system had deteriorated. And then over the last 2 years, it's been investigation after action after demand. And then that finally led to last October when the council opened up a prudence investigation. So this was saying, okay, not only do we want you to go forward and fix this, but we want to look back and see if there's any punishment that should be levied on Entergy for their lack of action.
Has Entergy responded to this report?
They basically have said they don't want to respond to what could be ongoing litigation or ongoing regulatory matter. But in a response, they included that they have really increased the amount of money that they're putting into the distribution system, which is true. And over the past, 6 months to a year, we've seen some very positive steps. Last fall, they hired a third-party consultant to kind of come in and give them an evaluation of the distribution system, what they have to do. Like I mentioned, they're increasing the amount they're spending on operations and maintenance. But at the same time, the way the advisors saw that argument, they were saying, that's good, and we're glad you're doing that now. But that doesn't absolve you from, 4 or 5 years of inaction.
And, 4 or 5 years of inaction, this is also the second scandal for the utility company in less than 2 years.
So the city council earlier this year had levied a $5 million fine on Entergy for its role in a scheme to pay actors to make speeches at city council meetings in favor of its proposed power plant in New Orleans East. The council had briefly considered rescinding approval for that, but they ended up, basically walking back and going with this $5 million fine. But yeah, this would be the second major fine. And that $5 million fine, according to council member Helena Moreno, is the biggest fine that the council has ever levied. So it seems like they're flexing this kind of monetary power that they have. Mm-hmm.
And this fine, anywhere from $1.5 to $2 million, this fine is a recommendation from the council's utility advisors. So is the council likely to follow through on this?
Well, we're being told it's going to be up for a public discussion this summer, so we'll have to wait and see. I think there's a good likelihood that they will. I mean, especially given that, they've shown that they're not afraid to fine Entergy significant amounts of money. And again, talking to Andrew Tuozzolo, what he was saying is that a fine like this, it gets back to the people who are really the true bosses at Entergy, which are the shareholders of that company. So he's basically looking at this as if fines like this are the way that you're really going to change the behavior of a for-profit investor-owned company. So we'll have to wait and see, but I think the likelihood of there being a significant fine is pretty high.
Michael Isaacstein, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
The Lens hosted a forum this week on public records, how to use them and how to request them, specifically from courts and prosecutors' offices. Lens editor Charles Maldonado moderated the discussion, which was attended by about 30 people, including lawyers, activists, and other people interested in knowing more about what their local and state governments are up to. If you missed it, don't worry. We've got a recap for you. A big focus of the conversation was advising people on what to include and what to leave out of public records requests. Let's take a listen.
How do you ask? Call up, ask them what kind of records exist that contain the information that you're looking for. Keep in mind, when you file a public records request, they do not have to create new records in order to respond to your request. So never ask for a list of anything. Say you wanted a list of teachers who were, who went, acted as chaperones on a field trip, for a school. Don't submit the public records request asking for the list, because an actual list might not actually exist. So ask for any records that reflect attendance by staff at the field trip. You might get sign-in sheets, you might get permission slips, whatever. But never ask for a list unless you are absolutely positive that a list exists. Like if a politician says, goes before city council and says, we have a list of that, then ask for that list. But other than that, never ask for one.
Later in the meeting, Charles explained that the law is pretty flexible about how you can submit a public records request. But in the middle of that discussion, a member of the audience said he'd been denied records from some New Orleans charter school networks, apparently for failing to format his requests the way they wanted.
They can ask you to file, they can request of you politely to ask for records in a certain way. Like, the city really likes you to do it online through the next request portal, which is actually pretty good. I've 90% good things to say about it, but they can't require that you do it that way.
Some of the charter school things say you must.
No, they're wrong. Yeah. Go back to the earlier slide about how they don't always know what they're talking about. Yeah. But yeah, they can't require you to file it a certain way. They can't deny you based on asking for it in a certain way. And technically, going up to a public official and asking it for them without even writing anything down is a public records request under the law. Now, I wouldn't recommend that because you want to have a record of sending the request.
Part of the presentation was called Dealing with Denials. Charles and Scott Sternberg, a lawyer specializing in the First Amendment, talk about an increasingly common reason public officials will give for denying a records request. Locating them and reviewing them would be unduly burdensome.
They will tell you that redacting a request is overly burdensome, which is a very difficult one to overcome. And actually, I'm wondering if Scott could tell us a little bit more about that.
Right. So there's actually no exemption in the law for overly burdensome. What the law says is that the law contemplates that records are all going to be in some room, and there's a big room, and they just tell you where they are and go get them, right? And so the law says that if collating or responding to the records request would be unduly burdensome, then they can say, the records are over there, go get them. What we've seen in the last 20 years, really, is a developing line of jurisprudence that they can just deny a request as overly burdensome and that it'll take too much. And so with your 58-point request, that's exactly what they're going to do when they hire a lawyer. It's just too many. What I have started telling people to do, doesn't matter if it's just 58 pages, too. They don't want to do the work. You're never going to get them to do the work. What I've started telling people to do is start small. And, you know, I advise journalists every day. I advise citizens every day on getting public records. You know what you want? Start one day and then work your way out. You know an email you want? Start with 1 hour. I want all the emails sent within this hour to this person and work your way out. And every time you send a new request, it starts that new 3-day clock ticking, right? So I've got a case right now with a major media organization here in town where we are trying to get public records and they keep denying it as unduly burdensome. So what we did was we said we want all of the emails between Sam and Charles at 11 o'clock on May 3rd that were sent at 11 o'clock, and then we're just working our way out.
In the fall of 2018, Kenner Mayor Ben Zahn banned the purchase and use of Nike products in Kenner Recreation Department activities, essentially because Nike used NFL player Colin Kaepernick in an endorsement campaign. Kaepernick, of course, became the subject of intense scrutiny for kneeling during the national anthem at football games. Criminal justice reporter Samantha Soon requested communications from the city of Kenner related to the ban.
Just for fun, I decided to request all their emails mentioning the word Nike and or the word athletic. I think it was like the Kenner Athletic Center was the name of the facility, I think. Charles mentioned, I didn't request all of them. I think that was the previous month or so because I thought they'd probably made that decision after the Kaepernick endorsement. So you can see I've got a paragraph there that's just like boilerplate language. And where that paragraph that says under the Public Records Act of Louisiana, I just copy and paste that into every request. And basically all of this, I actually copy and paste into every request. And I just have it saved in my Apple like notes app on my phone, and I just copy and paste it. And the only thing I change is the end of the first line, which is the thing I'm actually requesting. So I just copy and paste that and send it off. And then one quick thing I'll mention. So I set a reminder for myself for 3 days later, which I ended up needing because they didn't respond, which was not a surprise. So I sent a reminder. And I mean, again, it's boilerplate language. It doesn't really have to be super polite. It also doesn't have to be super, rude either. It's just kind of flat, you know, like I'm just asking them to uphold the law and like they're supposed to. So their response was, I mentioned this earlier, so I won't go into it again, but their response was that, I sent it to like Kenner Mayor at NOLA.gov or something, and they said like, please contact our legal department instead. And then, so this was my response. So this is an example of how you might handle this. I mean, pretty much as soon as you guys start filing public records requests, that's when you're going to start getting these obstacles. Like sometimes they'll just hand it to you, but very, very often they're going to throw something at you, like it's too much work or whatever. So here I cited the law again. So you'll notice, I actually linked to the law, which is, I don't know, you can do or cannot, but I would recommend actually citing the law. So where it says LARS 4433.1, that's much easier to do than it looks. You literally just have to Google it. So I would just, anytime they say like under LARS, blah, 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 I would just copy that and paste it into Google and the law will come up. And it's pretty easy actually to just read the law. It's a state law. And then you can navigate around to the little chunks of it and find the one that pertains to what you're doing. So here, this is something that Charles mentioned. You received the request on Monday. Please notify your legal department that the response is due today. And then I added another thing, that there's another part of the law saying you're supposed to specify the records custodian, which they hadn't done, which is why they got it at that generic email. So I pointed that out as well and cited the law. So that was like an hour after they said contact our legal department. And then I got a note from the legal department, I think like 30 minutes later. So you can see like 4:49 p.m., like right under the wire, they said like, okay, they responded and they gave me, I did end up having to pay $25 for a CD, but they did respond.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. We'll be back next Friday, and please consider supporting nonprofit journalism in New Orleans. Go to support.thelensnola.org to make a donation today.